Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Western world has given Israel a green light to exact revenge in the wake of Hamas's attack on October 7th. In doing so, the West has made it clear international humanitarian law and the rules of war are subjective and arbitrary. Some lives are more valuable than others. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest, Ryan Christian in Franklin. He is founder and editor of The Last American Vagabond and the host of The Daily Wrap-Up. In Tehran, we cross to Saeed Yasser Jabrali. He is assistant professor of political science at the Institute for Humanities and Cultural Studies. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to the professor in Tehran. I'd like to read you a fragment that was stated by the Secretary General of the United Nations. Apparently, what I'm about to read is very, very controversial. I want your thoughts. It is also important to recognize the attacks by Hamas did not happen in a vacuum. The Palestinian people have been subjected to 56 years of suffocating occupation. Is there any errors in that, those two sentences there? Because I've read it about 50 times, and I don't see what's wrong with it. But apparently, the people, the powers that be in the West think this is an atrocity in itself. Go ahead, in Tehran.
Look, I think what is going on in Gaza is that Israel is preparing for a land invasion. I want to answer this question that why Israel is preparing for land invasion and why the green light that you mentioned is being given by the Western leaders to Israel to invade Gaza. To answer the question, we should look at the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm from the Israeli point of view. First of all, you have experienced an unprecedented intelligence failure. Palestinians could successfully hide all phases of this operation from the eyes of Israel's intelligence service and its complicated spying technologies. It means that this can happen again and again in the future. So the people who were promised, I mean Israelis, the residents of the occupied territories, the people who were promised to lead a normal life in the occupied territories now can swear that Israel is not a safe place to live. Mm-hmm. Reverse migration had already started and certainly will intensify. And this means that the end of Israel is near. No population, no country. In such a situation, the only way left to compensate for this catastrophic failure is to occupy Gaza, wipe Hamas off from the earth, and create this certainty for the residents of the occupied territories that the source of the threat, that is Hamas, is completely eliminated. Israel sees no other...
If I could interrupt here and go to Franklin, go to Ryan in Franklin, I agree that that is the stated goal, but to get rid of Hamas, you're going to have to get rid of the population at the same time. My point is, and in my introduction I was suggesting, is that the West is culpable in alignment with Israel in committing what is nothing less than genocide. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah. It is an objective reality, what you just said. And this is what's so frustrating about this entire conversation. As you so eloquently put in the beginning, it's very clearly revealing that they do not care about all of the things that they, you know, the so-called rules-based international order clearly only applies when they want it to, right? I mean, these are like the things I always maintain that I want my audience and everybody listening to understand. And these are objective realities. The United Nations has always maintained this is an occupied territory. And because that's a reality, that means that under the Geneva Conventions, any occupied territory has the legal right to armed struggle, armed rebellion. That means that Hamas's actions as the resistance of one of the factions of resistance of Gaza, of the Palestinian people, was a legally protected act. Now, once crimes that might have been or were committed after that were committed, now those are crimes. Sort of like when U.S. military commit rape or murder or anything else that happens overseas, those are crimes. It doesn't then immediately invalidate the action, if it were legal, of a military action. But to answer your first question, this is so frustrating because what was stated by the United Nations is so blatantly obvious, and even more so how frustrating it is that it took him 16 days of indiscriminate 24-hour bombing of civilian locations before he said that. And then they go so far as to attack him on at the UN, revoke their diplomat access, or and then also literally condemn them and ask for them to resign for stating an objective reality. You know, it just shows you that they're trying to whitewash the actions against civilians in Gaza. Now, on that point, if you'll let me continue for one more second, I think it's important that we understand that there is no way to remove if you're bombing places where there are civilians present, whether or not they claim they're using them as human shields, and we can get into that, which the UN has investigated and found that Hamas hasn't been doing that. But that means that you are still committing a crime as collective punishment. Politico is now writing articles about how it's now somehow legal because they're using them as human shields. We know that if anybody else was doing this, they would be treating them like the criminal that they should be treated as. So it's grotesque. And what they're doing is whitewashing the crimes they would hold anybody else accountable for.
Well, you know, George, let's go to Budapest here. George, you know, it's really quite remarkable is that Bin Laden said, because these governments in the West were elected, that means the people that elected these governments that are committing crimes against Arabs and Muslims, they are legitimate targets. So the Western media and the Western political world has adopted Bin Laden's doctrine because, well, the American people apparently voted for Joe Biden, and Joe Biden is doing this. Do you see how perverse this logic is? Because then you know, you could turn around and say, well, Benjamin Netanyahu was elected, so all of the people that voted for him are legitimate targets as well. I mean, it's all very perverse, but it's being adopted, George.
It has indeed. And there's a further irony to what you just said, which is that Hamas is always described in the Western media as not the legitimate representative of the Palestinian people, not even the legitimate representative of the people of Gaza. Indeed, Gaza is often described as a military dictatorship, which means that it's even less of a justification to punish the people of Gaza for the alleged depredations of Hamas. I mean, at least in the case of Bin Laden, said, "Well, you have these democratic elections. You say they're all democratic, and therefore the people have chosen administrations that one after another have pursued the same policy in the Middle East, for example, of unconditional support for Israel. So therefore, since there's no dissent, as far as the political elite is concerned in the United States on the issue of Israel, therefore." It stands to reason that all American people are guilty of the crimes of Israel. Of course, it's a ridiculous piece of logic, but it can indeed be applied to Israel. And so, therefore, the argument that someone, oh, this is all crimes, targeting civilians. Well, yes, it's true that Hamas targeted civilians in there on October the 7th, but they also targeted military targets. Right? They attacked military bases, which is kind of similar to what most other countries do. The United States, it bombs military targets. It also attacks civilian targets. So therefore, the attempt to suggest that Hamas exclusively attacked civilian targets is completely wrong. But it's done deliberately to suggest that somehow what happened on October the 7th is like the Holocaust. It was just simply an attempt to eradicate the Jewish people. It's a completely false narrative, but perpetrated in order to justify anything that Israel wants to do.
Well, and of course, George, nothing happened before October 7th. Everything was calm. Everyone was happy. Everyone was singing Kumbaya. Let's go back to the professor in Tehran. In your first answer to me, you talked about the end of Israel, the existential threat that Israel faces right now. That is very real. And as we wait, I tend to think that there will not be a massive ground invasion because they'll just lose, and they don't want to lose. And there are people in Israel that want a preemptive strike on Hezbollah up north. I think that is very bad calculation as well. Your thoughts, in Tehran? Go ahead.
Look, as you have seen, Mr. Biden, Sir Emmanuel Macron, the French president, have all warned Israel about the ground invasion. neither Biden nor Macron are concerned about Palestinians. It's crystal clear for them that the ground invasion will create a quagmire for Israel in Gaza. Why? You know, when this 360 square kilometers area was under the occupation of Israel, the heads of the regime, including Ariel Sharon, used the word hell to describe Israel's difficulties in Gaza. Finally, the regime quietly withdrew its military forces from Gaza in 2005. This happened in a time that Palestinians were fighting with stone, not with missiles capable of reaching Tel Aviv. Moreover, the Muslim world will not tolerate ground invasion. Such a mistake could activate other anti-Israel forces in the region. Israel is already at war with Syria. It is already at war with Lebanon. In case of a ground invasion, Israel should prepare itself to fight a multi-front war that it will not be capable of fighting. It cannot, because it lacks strategic depth. You know, strategic depth is a term in military literature that refers to the distances between the front lines and the heartland. Israel lacks it. I'm wondering if the residents of the occupied territories have spent enough time in the recent years to learn swimming in the sea or not.
It's very interesting, Ryan, because this is the strategic dilemma that Israel faces. And it's a dilemma that it created for itself. Those of us that have studied this, it's 56 years in the making. No one should be surprised by this. Go ahead, before we go to the break.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, we're talking about 75 years plus, if you want to get really specific about it in regard to occupation. But, you know, the illegal state of Israel is a legal reality, right? So we have to always go from there. We have to understand that this is an illegal occupation. But, you know, there's a lot of nuance to it. Obviously, it's been going on a really long time, and there's people, innocent people on all sides. And I think that's what this conversation needs to, what we're trying to make clear, is that innocent people on every side matter.
The whole point of all the programs I'm making about this is there's context, folks. There's context. And when we have context, then we can have a discussion. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, let's go back to George in Budapest. George, we've seen the ongoings at the Security Council going nowhere, and it's basically the United States and its allies that just insist on repeating over and over again in every way possible fashion, you know, Israel has the right to self-defense. Well, yeah, it does. Okay, I don't know what the argument is here, but actually it's code. It's a coded narrative to say, because it has the right to self-defense, it can do anything it wants in response. And that is the catch right there. And that's why other countries on the Security Council won't go along with it, because then they would be complicit in ethnic cleansing and genocide. George.
That's exactly right. It's a bizarre kind of a talking point. Israel has a right to self-defense, which means, yes, Israel can do whatever it likes. And then the corollary of that is the constant attack on this nebulous kind of Arab, Iranian world. Oh, they don't recognize Israel's right to exist. And of course, that's also totally untrue, because of course they do, but the issue, because to the extent that anyone can, I mean, no one has a right to exist, but the issue is, of course, what are the final borders of the state of Israel? And that is very much in dispute. But going back to your point about the United Nations, it is indeed, that's all that the United States and its allies say is, well, this is an attack on the Jews, the Jewish people, and therefore, since we don't want to repeat the Holocaust, you know, we have to give essentially the Jewish people a blank check or whatever they want. I mean, this was very much reiterated by Annalena Baerbock, the German foreign minister, who says, well, we in Germany have a special bond with Israel because of our terrible past, and therefore we always have to support Israel. And of course, it's completely nonsensical, because anything that you do has still to be in conformity with international humanitarian law. Just saying that, well, you have a right to defend yourself. Yes, you have a right to defend yourself, but you don't have a right to use a horrific disproportionate force, and you don't have a right to violate obvious norms of international humanitarian law, such as cutting off a civilian population from food, water, electricity, fuel, that is obviously a violation. To say that this somehow is about our right to defend ourselves, it's obviously a lie.
Well, no, this is a call to suspend morality is what it's all about. And it's an exception, only this time. Well, no, international humanitarian law should apply all the time to everyone. It's really quite remarkable. I want to say this to all my guests. Israel is the child of the United Nations. The United Nations made Israel, okay? And of all countries to defy its rules and resolutions, you know, that's never pointed out here. Let's go back to the professor in Tehran. I'm sure, Professor, you noticed that there's an echo of the post 9/11 war on global terror. And of course, Iran is always in the center of it all. OK, so let me get this straight. People under occupation in Gaza break out of an open air prison, attack Israelis, including civilians. And so the United States has to attack Iran. Can you explain that logic to me? Because I'm not sure I get it.
If the United States could attack Iran, it would have done it in the recent 45 years. It is not able to do so. The West now, not even against Iran, even against Israel, again against Palestinians, the West has no longer the ability to interfere to save Israel. For the same reason that it couldn't topple the legitimate Syrian government of Bashar Assad, for the same reason that it couldn't extend NATO to the Russian borders, for the same reason that it couldn't invade Iran despite frequently claiming that all options are on the table. You see, all options are now under the table. The world today is very different from what it was a decade or two ago. There's no reason for Iran's interference. Palestinians are strong enough. The resistance forces in the region are at their strongest position in history, and Israel and its Western supporters are at their weakest position. So I think Hamas saw it as the best time to take back the occupied territories. I think there will be no war, no massacre to mark the end of the Israel. The end of the Israel will be marked by an evacuation mission. What we saw in Afghanistan about the US military forces will be repeated for the citizens and residents of the occupied territories. My suggestion is that if the Western leaders are concerned about the lives of the Zionists, they should provide free flight services for the residents of the occupied forces to anywhere in the world they have come from. There is no need for an all-out war. The United States is not able to wage war.
Well, they may try, Ryan, and the worry is that they might fail. I don't think Hezbollah is afraid of two aircraft carriers in the East Mediterranean. I don't think they're afraid of it. I mean, they've had their fighters in Syria. They're prepared. They've been waiting, I would say, from their perspective, for a situation like this to arise for a very long time. And the Israelis fear Hezbollah. They definitely fear it. But, you know, overall, just kind of an overarching thing here, it's really the pathetic state of the West, where hegemony trumps humanity. I mean, they have the language of humanitarian rights, and they use it as a cudgel very often around the world. But it's really hollow in its meaning, because if there is an exception, then the rule doesn't work. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, and this is a classic tactic. And I mean, you can look back through all of pretty much all of U.S. foreign policy. And the joke I often make on my show is that they're batting zero, right? They claim we're fighting for freedom. We're trying to give freedom to these countries. And they invade, topple, and destroy, and leave it in a ruin, and then go to the next one and the next one. And so either they're the worst possible country in the world at actually spreading freedom, or maybe they're not actually trying to spread freedom. You know, it's like, why we let that continue is beyond me. I mean, Libya left as a, you know, open slave market, now just warring factions, and we just never talk about that. It was, you know, over and over and over. So they don't have the moral high ground here. I think what you're pointing out is important, that they use these terms in order to control the perception and literally the actions of other people, including their allies. I mean, look at what happened with Nord Stream pipeline in Germany. I mean, it's very clear that these people are the very ones that they act like their adversaries are in regard to the disregard for international law. You know, so nobody should hold their standing as legitimate, right? We need to, I mean, I forget the person's name, and I wish I remembered it right now, but a Palestinian representative on, I believe it was BBC, made a very, very important point. The only thing that the Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian representatives are actually asking for at this moment is the equal application of international law. Think about how important and obvious that is, and yet we can prove that's not happening.
What a radical idea, isn't it? Just saying the obvious. It's extraordinary. You know, George, you know, we were brought up to hate Iran, the media. You know, we had all the think tanks and all of that. And, you know, here we go. This is kind of how it's framed. The crazy mullahs, the crazy people in Tehran, over and over again, demonizing them, denigrating them. But this is exactly how Western leaders act right now. Okay, they're the ones that are fanatics. They've lost their mind. George.
That's exactly right. And it's very amusing that there is this logic being uttered by Western leaders, especially in the United States, that because Iran supported Hamas and because Iran supports Hezbollah and other proxy forces, Iran must be bombed. And this has been said by Lindsey Graham, it's been said by Joseph Lieberman, former vice presidential candidate.
I didn't even know Lieberman was still alive until he reared his ugly head. I didn't know that, okay? I thought that we'd moved on to greener pastures, okay?
Yes, me too. But that's it. But what they say, all that Iran is therefore a legitimate target. But of course, you know, when it comes to Ukraine, they don't say that they, the NATO powers, are legitimate targets for essentially bankrolling and supporting and arming Ukraine. Hey, well, we're not a party to the conflict. So again, it's an absurd inconsistency. But the problem, however, if we start escalating this war, and this is the issue that no one wants to talk about, is that Israel has nuclear weapons, and Israel, unlike anyone else, is ready to use them. I mean, we know how ruthless Israel is. So if it is indeed Israel's destiny to be involved in a multi-front war that it is in danger of losing, Israel will use nuclear weapons. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. So it's a very dangerous situation, and it's one that we've come to, and because no one has attempted to restrain Israel. And if Israel were to use nuclear weapons, what would Mark Levin and the rest of them say? Israel has a right to defend itself.
Let's go back to the professor rapidly running out of time. I really do. I'm glad George brought up the issue of nuclear weapons, because I also think, considering how the Israelis want to destroy Hamas, which means we'll have to destroy all the Palestinians, that they could resort to weapons of mass destruction, maybe not a nuclear weapon, but other ones. I mean, white phosphorus, they use it on a regular basis now, apparently, and no one calls them out on it. Your thoughts as we end the program. Go ahead.
No, Israel will not be able to use nuclear weapons because, as you see, the Hamas forces will not be killed by nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are going to destroy the ordinary people. If Israel is fighting Hamas, the option is not military for nuclear weapon. The option is going to invade from the ground, and Israel will not succeed. As I said, it is not capable of invading Gaza from the ground, because Hamas has prepared and planned for an all-out war. And if Israel enters Gaza from Lebanon, from Syria, and from some other forces, it will be attacked. Nuclear weapon could destroy Israel itself.
Well, gentlemen, we're rapidly running out of time. Obviously, we're going to keep a very close eye on the events here. But one, the primary purpose of this program was to show the rank hypocrisy of the West when it uses the words of human rights and international human rights law. It's just suffocatingly stupid, okay? That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Budapest, Franklin, and in Tehran. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.